At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change. We still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode. Storyline by storyline. Character by character. As we break down the making of your favorite zip code. With your host. Charles
Rosen. Did I say
that? Jeez. Harry
Mullin. This thing about the real person, and we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests and all your questions live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh yeah.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Super exciting. This week, we are going to be diving into season 4's casting with Diane Young. Now, we recorded this a few weeks ago, I think 2 weeks ago, and this was kind of how we got started talking about it. There's a special guest. It's going to be super fun. So I don't think you want to hear from me anymore. So let's go right to that conversation. Season 4's casting.
Thank you.
Northwest is very kind to you. You don't look like you haven't aged. You look younger than you did. You look less stressed, put it that way.
Right off the bat, they're throwing
them
out there.
Oh, you mean not living in Hollywood means that someone is less stressed?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, let's just hop right into it. Charles and Larry, we are reuniting with a good friend of yours from back in the day, Diane Young. I mean, anybody who pretty much walked through the doors from season 1 to 7 or 8, the end of season 7, came through Diane Young, right? So, Charles, do you have memories of meeting Diane?
Sure do. Diane, I remember that the head of the spelling casting department was Tony Shepard, was his name. He's worked for Disney now for many, many years. And he introduced me to two casting directors. One was a team and one was Diane. The team went on to do a lot of projects, I'm sure. But there was no question. And as I said to Diane when we first connected, Pete, you know, it was very clear to me. I only had one criteria. I knew nothing about casting. Who am I going to want to spend the day with? Who's going to make me laugh and who will laugh at my jokes? And it was very clear. And you know, again, when Diane came to me and when we met, we had an order of 12 episodes. And only a fool would think that we would be doing more than 12 episodes at that point. Do you agree, Diane?
Yes. We all talked about doing the episodes and then it was going to be over and looking for other jobs. That's what I remember.
Is that what Tony said to you pretty much?
That's what a lot of people were talking about.
Right.
And I was like, let's just see what happens.
But you had done Growing Pains right before it. So you had connections with young Hollywood.
Yes.
And I think that probably was, and it was ABC, which although it was no longer called Aaron's Broadcasting Company, it still carried weight at the company.
Right.
And so I think you were really perfect for what we were doing, and certainly perfect person for me to work with. That only got embellished after the first 6 episodes when Paul Wagner joined us. And
Diane
probably had more direct contact with Paul during the seasons that we worked together, just because it was his interest, and we cast in the Valley. We switched from being based in the city to the Valley.
Yes, I remember they wanted that, and you came and said that they wanted me to go out to the Valley, and I said, well, I didn't want to because I would lose that proximity to you. But I moved to the Valley.
So what's really exciting for Beverly Hills 90210 show fans is that we're going to be covering season by season the characters. We have a lot of questions for you, Diane. And Larry, you came in at season 5. So we thought season four. So we thought it would be a good place to start is at season 4. But one of the main things that are happening in season 4 is the casting for a big part, right? I mean, there's a big storyline going on, Charles, where Brenda is going to elope. And so we thought it would be fun to reunite you, Diane, with somebody that you had to cast in season 4.
Oh,
and he's coming on.
He's coming on.
From France, I imagine. Yes,
he's in Paris.
From Paris, yeah. Oh,
I love Paris.
Right, but now you have someone who you can stay with, right, David?
Where is David? Has he come on?
No, he's connecting to audio. Okay. The Zoom thing takes a second here.
This was a kind of a fun storyline for us, where there's going to be a real smash and grab romance with his father.
There he is.
David,
there
he is. This is 8x10.
The
8x10.
Bonjour, David.
Bonjour. Ça va? Diane.
Hello, David. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness.
David, you came in and you actually came into the series in, I think, season 1 or 2, right? You were there early on.
Season 1.
Yeah.
I think that would probably be, some pretty good trivia. Yeah, I was the bellhop in season 2, I think.
Season one. Palm Springs weekend.
Oh, excusez-moi, monsieur.
I would like to have a lot of this stuff not be in my head, but it's all in my head.
Right.
And Diane, more than once in the process of casting, Denise Dowles being an example, a few others say, well, we've cast somebody in a very small role, but there's someone who would be really good for this part. And you were that. Am I right, Diane?
Correct. Yes.
Diane, tell me your recollection of meeting David.
He was an actor that I had pictures and resume on, and I thought he might be right for a role. And that's how I met him. He came in and saw me. And we chatted. Just, normal casting process.
Right.
And I liked him. We got along and I thought, okay, he'd be nice and easy on the set. So that would be terrific for everybody.
You know, what's funny is...
And a good actor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You hear a lot of that advice I was with Howard Fine and Larry Moss from the beginning, but in a lot of rooms you hear, this is my son, Gautier.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Oh. My little French son. Anyway, you hear a lot about all the things to do and all the things that casting directors and producers and are looking for, and that's one of the things you hear, like someone who's easy to work with. And of course you're listening. Of course, you're trying to, if you're smart, you're trying to absorb as much advice and take as much advice, as you can. But sometimes, you hear that and you think, okay, it takes a back burner. You don't really realize. I didn't realize. I mean, that was naturally, I was raised by my mother. So I felt like I had this, I was associated with that. And I said, well, I came here when I was 25 and was raised by this woman who I, adore and respect highly. And I thought, okay, so I have that. But I didn't realize that really is later on when I went into a room. Please stop doing that. I led with that. I mean, I would get calls from my agent would say, you don't need to meet the casting director. You don't need to go through that project. You can go, you know, at times, you know, or the casting director wants to meet you to prepare you for what the producers actually want and the director and whatnot. But I realized, like, you know what? No, I want to be in as many rooms as possible because I understand what their concerns are. I'll bring the acting, I'll bring all that stuff, but I understand that it's not just that. And so when you say that, it's funny, like, I think the actors don't really realize, like—
Oh, hey. I have to jump in and just totally agree with you on that. Take the meeting. And the fact of the matter is, I had passed on 90210. I'd seen it, the 2 hour pilot. It was kind of unwatchable. And it was 30 minutes of music video. It's not what anyone else got to see.
Yeah, and, you know, MTV was blowing up too.
Yeah, well, that's right. And they were using all the MTV techniques, which is not Aaron Spelling sensibility. So it was all a mess. And I passed on the show. But then my agent called and said, he wants to meet you. I was working on Northern Exposure. He said, he wants to meet you. Like, I'm going to meet a legend. I've always communicated that to my class at UCLA, my daughter, Lindsay, who's in the business. Take the meetings. You never know what's going to be. The only thing that happened to waste your time. The other thing that I just want to say about this role that you had, and I don't know if you remember this, Diane, specifically when we started season four. So season four was the season that Aaron didn't want to have. Aaron did not want to go to college. He wanted to stay in high school and just have it go on and on. And in season three, we were able to convince the network that we needed to get into real time, that we needed to have these people senior year, and we needed to move on for all sorts of reasons. And so there was a lot of anxiety about the fact that we were changing our format so drastically. And when we started in season four, Melrose Place had just, you know, had their best season right before us. And the first two or three episodes, they got a higher rating than we did. So this woman who was president of Fox for about 2 minutes, named Lucy Salhaney, who, yes, look at that smile on Larry's face, just remembering Lucy, through Jonathan Littman, who was our executive at Fox at the time, calls me up and says, there's concern. And what I said is, well, we're going to have, and we had not even locked it in yet at all, David. It was, well, we're going to have Brenda elope in Vegas. And in Sweeps, we're going to have Honeymoon in Vegas. And it's going to be the number one show you got that week. And we're going to vastly outpoint Melrose on it. So let's just build to that. Give me a break to start college and the college shows, and which were looking good. You know, Larry did the first one and Chip Johannesson did the second one. And they both were really looking great. So, but I just want to know the context. There was a lot of pressure on that part that you were playing, and there was a lot of obviously tension in our set in its own way because, you know, of some of the situations that the management of the company had with Shannon.
Diane, are you aware of that? Like, are you aware from your end of things in casting that this is going to be a huge part and what Chuck just sort of said?
I was, and I had heard about it. But I kept waiting for it to come true and to happen. It would be in the back of my head, and then occasionally it would come forward. But I had to wait because to get specifics.
Yeah.
I always try to deal with specifics and time and all of that. And I wasn't hearing anything from Fox.
In regards to
the elopement, the storyline.
But we should also bring up, and it's a okay time to talk about this. The fact is that Shannon is going to be leaving at the end of this season. This is going to be her last season, and I'm curious.
Yeah, we didn't know that.
I was going to ask you do not know that at this point.
Of course not. No.
But there was some tension in the conversations might have.
Yes, but no. For the other.
So for both David and Diane, we'll start David. Were you aware of some of the stuff that was going on with Shannon behind the scenes?
You know, I have to confess, I was at that time that actor, I mean, an actor that, you know, it was all like, I was just so content and happy to isolate myself within my world of acting. And I really didn't get involved in, and I didn't try to think about the politics or what was happening. I just focused on what, you know, the arc of the story, breaking down the script, breaking down, you know, doing what, you know, my craft. And yes, I heard rumors about, you know, even, you know, coming on to the show about Shannon. Just, I didn't care. I was like, you know what? I have full confidence that everything's going to be fine. And it was. I just, you know, everyone's different. I had a different relationship with everyone. And so I didn't know, like last time I was on with you, I didn't know how critical this storyline was. No idea. Just an audition, put everything into it. I knew Aaron was really a big supporter. I was, you know, very, very, very honored and you know, it was almost untouchable for me in terms of being an actor. I wasn't, you know, Brad Pitt, you know? So, I mean, to have a job.
You got a nice face though, buddy.
Yeah,
still do.
But yeah. I mean, I wasn't at the level. So I didn't think like, it was a lot for Aaron Spelling to give me, you know, in the room in front of, you know, 15 producers or 10 producers to walk over after the audition and give me a kiss on the cheek and a hug. I mean, I was like, okay, it was a lot for me to deal with. So I just had to enjoy it, kind of just take it on the run. And I didn't think too much about it. So no, I didn't really know how important all the, you know, I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes and all of those things. And I really didn't want to know because I just wanted to do what I know how to do. And, you know, I didn't want to get involved I didn't want to distract myself. So basically.
Hey, Pete, I wanted to wonder who else was up for the role. Do you remember Diane?
Good question.
Yeah. She might have a notebook. Give it to me.
You know what? I actually have my season 4 list book with me and all of that. But I don't remember. Perfectly honest, I don't remember who else.
Then, when Diane said to me, "You've seen this person before," the unspoken part of that conversation was, "And you liked him, and I think you'll like him again, because the other ones I'm seeing, I'm not sure you're going to like so much." I used to take it that was the unfinished part of the sentence. Am I right, Diane?
You are absolutely right, Chuck. Yes.
Intuition, guys. You can't run a show without it.
I want to say, I think Jessica and Paul had a big part in this also. In this selection,
Paul Wagner and Jessica Klein.
Yes, I would believe they would be there. I just want to mention them.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I
just went along with everybody was happy with, unless I really couldn't.
I know I was not in the room for the original casting of Stuart Carson.
Well,
I'm trying to think who wrote the script. It was the first script he appears in. I don't quite
Richard
know.
Gollins, probably.
So he would have been in the room then with Paul.
But, yeah, you know, casting.
The opening, after that, I watched the video and stuff.
Diane?
Yes.
You know, I think you might remember casting in Paul's office. I would sit across from him so he and I could look at each other while casting was going on. You know, there was nothing like a Paul Wagner eye roll. Is this one going to get out of here already? And usually, you know, David, as you know, in a casting session, sometimes the actor, it was such an unnatural. Social dynamic. So, you know, sometimes the actor is very nervous. And when the actor is very nervous, they start talking. And they sometimes talk their way out of a role. A 1 minute digression here. There was a movie that it was called Fall Apart. It was the one that it was a small little movie. And I had gone to Kenneth Branagh directed it, starred in it, and wrote it. And it was in black and white. And it was his ex-wife was in it. And it was, and I liked it. I finally got to go out and see a movie. And this guy had a small part. It was only like seven actors in the whole movie. And the actor who came in had a very small part in it. And I said, oh, I really liked your movie. And his response to me was, did you? And then he proceeded to tell me why the movie wasn't very good. And that went on for about 5 minutes. And those are the kind of mistakes, if any actors listen to it, because now most of it's on tape anyway, so you don't have those interactions. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious. You know, go ahead.
I wanted to ask Diane, I'll run through this quickly. You know, when I first met Aaron, I met him for a role, for the first role. I went in and read in that room that looked like a mini movie theater with all the seats and everything. Okay. So I went in and read this part. It was, I don't know if it was a couple, I think it was two or three pages. And I was just in LA, like I had just gotten there. And I started to read and I read the stuff. And Harry Gold was my agent. And he said, okay, you're not gonna get the role. I go, and you know, as an actor, later on it was like, okay, good, I'll book something else. But at that time I was like, ugh. And he goes, but I go, yeah. He goes, you're just too green, but they like you. So they're gonna give you this role. And that was the bellhop. So that's one part of it. Like, I was like, oh, because the role I was reading for was a recurring role. They were reading me possibly for a recurring role or something. That's what Harry said. I don't know. You know, you never know what you're being told. I give it to him. Just tell me what
the bellhop is coming. The bellhop's coming back. Just stick. Yeah.
Just motivate me. I'm with you. You know, lie to me. I don't care. So. But then, you know, Diane, I must say I was so surprised because I talked to Aaron and I on that second after I went and did the show in Vancouver. I think it was it Robin Hood's, and then I came back tonight. No, before that. So anyway, the point is that I was like, well, I've already done. And I don't know if I was already with Innovative Artists at that time with Nevin Delsofino, but I said, how can they bring me back as a different character? I'm like, what's this on? As a bellhop. I mean, am I not recognizable? And that's an actor for you,
well,
right?
I can answer that question. I just never assumed that anybody was really watching that closely.
Exactly. Fair enough.
I had no idea there would be people like Maggie and Crystal and Lisa. Dr. Sherry Weiss that would know every detail.
Aaron Martin.
I knew you had a part, but it wasn't amazing. It was a good part, but it was also three seasons before. And this was a very important role. And Diane had said, you should read this person again. Oh, the Spellings like him. Diane likes him. Everybody likes him. And as my friends Larry and Pete know, that casting was not, I got much better at it, hopefully, Diane, as it went on. I got better, and I even once in a while deigned to give an actor a slight take a director's position and say, will you try it this way? When that's usually only, we would leave those for directors, but it just wasn't what I was going to spend all my time on. So if there was a consensus that we got the right person, I'm there.
Diane, what's your side of this story with David? Do you remember thinking about it and saying, oh, he was really great as the bellhop? Or how does it come back to your mind to say, oh, I would like to try David again?
She didn't remember me at the bellhop. No, I'm just kidding.
It was the first time for her. Yeah.
She forgot. She's like, oh, I love this guy. He just got off the boat. Oh,
that's a secret.
Right. Well, don't.
You start going through names again. And I talked to Harry all the time because I had known him for many years. I trusted him. I hired his actors. And he said, well, I can't remember the exact conversation, but the gist of the conversation would be, what about David Gale? He had that small role before. You want to try him again because you guys liked him.
He's awesome.
And I'm like, okay, I'm good with that. And I check with a couple of people to see if they were good with that. And if they
Chuck,
were good
is
with
Chuck
that,
one of those people that you, is Chuck one of those people that you check with? Is Chuck one of those people?
Absolutely.
He doesn't remember.
Oh, she she did.
Doesn't
she
remember did me.
Yeah. She did. She would.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I would remind, I would give a hint as to what he had done before. And, you know, Chuck was really good about remembering people. So that was pretty much, that was part of my job.
He comes in, and then he has to read for this part. Chuck, this is a big, like we're looking at this 30 something years or 20 something years later. This is a big deal in the year that David Gale is in that office to be, Chuck has just said, it's a huge part in his mind. He's still talking about it being a big deal. So David, do you even realize how, and you said no, how big of a deal this is, but you know 90210 is huge.
In the room, I mean, look, everyone's different, of course, okay? I don't know other actors in the room. I'm not there for that. You know, I've been in the casting sessions for some independent things that I've been involved in. But I must tell you, you know, going into Spelling Television and walking into a room and just that room and then all of those producers lined up, it's like I have to turn my head to see everyone, producers, cast, everyone. I have to turn my head both ways to see everyone. It's a lot.
Yeah, that, man.
You do everything you can to prepare. There are a million different psychological tricks. There are a million things that you go through. Or I did. And then in the end, you know, the advice from the casting, from the my coaches, Larry and Howard Fine, Larry Moss, they were like, look, you want to get rid of the jitters. Take your time. Breathe. Don't start when they say start. Just you own it from the beginning. And then really, you know, you really wait until you are in that story, that character, and you wait. I don't beyond pregnant pause, and I played with that. And but still, walking into that room, for me, from my upbringing and the way there was several things that I needed to address first. Like I'm walking into a room full of people I know, some and some I don't. It's my upbringing to say, hi, how are you doing? As me. So right. I have to break the character. I have to go into this David Gale thing. And, you know, that's just me. I have to connect and look at everyone and say, hello. And then I have to come back and do my thing. I'm just not that guy who's going to walk in, you know, I have with different roles, but in these particular situations, I realize that with television, a lot of it is you, your personality, because you know, it's not like a movie you're just doing and you're out.
Sure.
They got to deal with you. Maybe, you know, who knows? 10, 8 well, seasons.
It's very interesting. I wonder if you remember this about Aaron Spelling, Diane, if you ever heard him speak about this, that about the idea that he felt one of his biggest strengths as a producer was casting, yes, being a former actor, and that the actor, he could tell, you know, when I remember the first time I heard him say this, hadn't met him yet. So I thought it was a little bullshitty. But the fact is, it's what he was, who he was,
yes,
that he could tell when stardust had come through the room.
Mm.
And he always used Julia Roberts as that example on a small little movie that she played in one of her first parts.
In that movie that she did.
Yeah, you know, the movie.
The pizza, Mystic Pizza, Mystic Pizza.
Mystic Pizza.
Yeah.
And that Mr. put out. And you know, so that was the one thing. And also, your son is back. I know.
Yeah. He's definitely going to be an actor. There's no
for
doubt.
Sure.
But the other thing, too, is that because of your height, your personality, your good looks, you reminded me. Now, I'm not the main player in this. When Mr. Spelling is in a casting session, it's about Mr. Spelling, because he wasn't in all of them, even recurring characters, he wasn't in all of them. But he, you reminded me that the happiest I remember Shannon in the years that I knew her, those 4 years that I knew her, was in her second season when she had a real serious boyfriend from Chicago named Chris Rufus. And he was a kind of a wealthy guy. And so that was kind of where the seed of, well, she'd be attracted to someone of great wealth came together. But I just want to throw that in too, that was what I was thinking.
He reminded you of the person that Shannon.
That Shannon really was with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I must say this. Now that you say that, you know, I have to give credit to the writing and the idea of that storyline. It was great. It was really fun. And when I realized something in my career at that point, it was just much easier for me, not easier, but more fun and easier because it was more fun to play a, it's difficult to play a straight guy. I mean, really straight guy and to make it interesting. That's a difficult thing, you know? Mm-hmm. But this guy was, you know, spoiled, possibly dealing with drugs, possibly doing all these things. And so that really was like juicy to me. Whatever guy, but because I knew that the backstory and the audience was thinking, oh, he's this and he's this and this is fast. This is too fast. What's he doing? You know, posing, you know? So that was all playing behind me so I could just be like the clown, the Joker. You know,
go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to say, story-wise, you know, as Chuck knows, we had really set this up well because this whole relationship started from the fathers. You know, Shannon's always had trouble in relationships because Jim goes against Dylan. Now, Jim set this thing up. Now he's stuck with it. Now, let's just talk briefly about your parents there, because Diane also cast your parents. They're both passed away.
I love my dad.
I'm trying to remember their names, and I wish I can't remember them. Wait,
hold on. I got you.
Hold on a second.
I got your back here. Peter Mark Richmond is...
Peter Mark Richmond, who I've used before. He was great. He was always terrific. Okay. And he was the overbearing father. There was so much pressure on the Stuart Carson character. He would belittle him, you know, because he thought he was a loser. And Shannon was making him a winner. So it was really a rich, you're right, it had some dimension to it. And what was the woman, his mother's name?
Do you remember that? I don't have, but I just knew that part Peter Mark Richmond, and also you also cast Gino Conforti, who was also in three, they both have like a Three's Company sort of history. They both were on Three's Company. But I wanted to ask you, Diane, do you recall David reading that? What is your take on that room, that scenario that we just talked about?
Well, it's really interesting because it was in Mr. Spelling's office. It had to have been.
The long couch.
And
ever.
Yes, the whole wall, and there are like master's paintings on the wall. So it can be very intimidating.
Pinball machine.
To walk into. And I always tried to talk to the actors and explain, this is what it's going to be. You will know me. You will know the producers, you know, Chuck, Larry, who are there, who you've met before, everybody's pulling for you, but it is intimidating walking into it. Said Tony Shepard will be there and Mr. Spelling will be there. He'll sit. He generally always sat right next to me on either side, and because I was reading with the actor. So I wanted each actor to know what it was like walking in there, because it's an intimidating situation. His office was bigger than a lot of people's houses.
And you were great, Diane. I remember, like, I was like, oh boy, okay, I've done all this prep. And then I would see you and I'd be like, okay,
good,
just focus on her, you know, like, let's just do this thing. And then, you know, you were really, I remember you, it was a very calming effect because, you know, we knew each other on that level where we had worked on it, you know. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know. Yeah.
Good. Have to walk in and be comfortable with everybody there. And, you know, and I thought that Mr. Spelling was always very kind and generous to the actors who came into that room, into his office, because he knew that it wasn't easy.
Yes, he did.
He knew, and he tried to put everybody at ease. And I think he did, you know, because he'd get up, he didn't introduce himself. And Chuck would introduce him, or Tony or I, and, you know, we'd have you sit down and chit chat a little bit, and then we'd start to read.
Yeah, he was good at not letting it getting understanding the balance in the room in terms of the energy and everything. If it was off, he would set it right. He would find a way to whatever it was, he would not let that continue in the wrong direction. These are things that I can articulate better now than I could when I was that age.
Sure. We're going to say goodbye to David. There's so many different people that we have to ask you about season four, Diane. So thank you so much for being here,
David,
man.
David, good to see you, my friend.
Great seeing you. I love all of you.
Wow. Love you too, man. Working very soon, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Larry.
All right. Have a good one, my man.
Love you guys. Take care. Right. Good night.
Good night, my man. Wow. All right. So, Diane, go ahead.
I just want to remember, Larry, when we do our 90210 lap, remember when we go to Paris that we got David's there.
I know. I keep thinking I should probably put him together with Anna Leon, who lives
That's
there.
That's right.
Too. She's so great.
By the way, the woman that you were thinking of is Claudette Nevins.
Claudette played his mother?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
very kind of old school and formal.
Because they lived, if you remember, in Bel Air, beyond Beverly Hills, a step above. And so that was the thing, because that Jim Walsh was really impressed with the family, the fact that Brenda would be marrying into that family. You know,
let's start talking about some of the bigger storylines of the season and finding who you were going to cast for these parts. I think probably we should start with Mark Damon Espinosa, right, who comes in as Andrea's love interest and eventual husband and all of that. Do you remember meeting Mark, Diane?
Oh, yes, definitely. Jessica and I talked about that
Jessica
role.
Klein.
And, yes, mm-hmm. Jessica Klein. And the name of the character, Jesse Vasquez, was that name because it was the name of her college boyfriend.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so I always liked that. And so I, started talking to agents and I got submissions for the role and they understood that it was going to be, a recurring role on the show. And I would get zillions of pictures and I'd go through all of the pictures. I talked to the agents, and I would set aside pictures and resumes on people that I thought were interesting. Who had an interesting acting background, even if it wasn't a lot of acting on, television or films, but stage as well, because I always liked that. And Mark his picture, his 8x10 was not the typical 8x10 that I got. And he didn't have a ton of credits. So I put it aside on my desk. It was over by my phone and I kept it there. And I had Kelly bring people in for me, set people up, and I'd read people. There were people I liked, but I kept going back to Mark's picture. And so finally, probably after about 3 or 4 days, I said, well, set him up. I'd kind of like to meet him and see what's going on. And he came in and he was terrific. And it was the same thing that we were just talking to David about. It was the ease of entering the room. And even though he didn't have a ton of credits, he just came in. He was friendly. He was from Texas, so he was he was really friendly. And it was natural. It was all part of who he was. So we sat down, we talked, we read, and I thought, I like this guy. And so that's when I brought him in. There was just something about him. And he had a really good theater background. And again, that was something that I did look for because I have great respect for people who work in the theater and what they go through.
Larry, this was going to be a big part for something you were writing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this was going to be the real thing because we also knew that that Gabrielle was pregnant at that point too.
Right.
So we knew we were going to be, going toward this. And this was going to become her husband. And I Jessica really was in the room for this casting. I was not in the original room. I have to confess, at first I was disappointed, but
I was waiting to see if you said it or not.
What's that?
Go ahead.
You let me know. That, I know. That, what were you doing in there, Chuck?
But, you know, I've grown to love Mark and his work, you know, as we've looked at it, the second look on shows, and he's done fabulous work for us. But yeah, in my mind, I was just seeing, you know, more of an LA, I guess, Latino, you know, it's just sometimes like, you know, that's what it was. But it really worked. The character worked. And you know, again, we were sort of in an end game at this point because of Gabrielle, the situation, and also the fact, you know, just the way the, you know, the things, the shows was growing.
And so Chuck, do you remember? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've been known to say that a baby is a show killer. There it is. Okay. I've been known to say that. So I have to own it.
Diane, does Gabrielle, I mean, this is someone that she's going to be working with and whatnot. Does Gabrielle have any thoughts or input? Does she tell you I like him? Does she have that opportunity or not really?
They all have the opportunity to come in and say whatever they wanted to me because I was right there next to the set and my office door was always open. And I got the actors coming in.
Yep.
But we didn't really, she wanted to know what was going on, if I recall correctly. And I was showing her pictures and she was going, okay. But she wouldn't say anything like, oh, he's terrific, that kind of thing. Oh, that's a great look. Because she knew it was up to all of us.
Sure.
And, you know, if she was involved, then she'd be involved. So she looked at the pictures and I brought the people in. Mm-hmm. And if there was somebody that she saw something in a photograph, then, you know, that I didn't, or I needed to look at a second time, then I would go ahead and do that. Because I was always open to second chances.
That's really great. Chuck.
Well, I like to Diane to know this, that, you know, we, as amplifying on what Larry has said, that, you know, we've watched a lot of episodes doing this podcast over the years now. And, you know, I think neither of us remembered how pitch perfect Mark is in almost every moment he has. It didn't matter if he was the bartender flirting with the girls to get better tips. It didn't matter. There's a scene that he does with Ian Ziering.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Explaining
about white privilege.
Where he gets into it. Yeah, we used something that Karen had in law school as the basis of what he had experienced. That was just, you realize, oh, this guy is going to be a very formidable lawyer by the way he talks. And so just that could not have done better for what our needs were with casting Mark.
He remains
a good friend of this podcast.
He's a good dude. Really like Mark. Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Want to ask you about a whole bunch of more, but we should talk about, I guess, because she will become an eventual cast member. Kathleen Robertson also comes in here in season 4, and also Nick Pryor, Chancellor Arnold. So both of them. Do you remember Kathleen?
I do remember Kathleen. She was another person who stood out. And it's just sometimes an actor will walk into your office and there will be something about that actor. And it'll be, okay, I need to pay closer attention. I need to really know what's going on with this person. And she was one of them. She was Mark, David, and she was another one who had the ease when she came in and she wasn't nervous. And we just sat and I always made an effort to sit and really chat with the actors to begin with and see what was going on with them just in general, and then go into the role, unless I felt that the actor just wanted to go in and read, and then that was fine. Because sometimes it settled them down a little bit. But Kathleen was terrific. She was terrific, and she had a really good sense of herself.
Do you remember her hat? That's what caught us.
Yeah,
that's
she
what
told really me
drew,
that
that's
she
what drew us to her.
She told me that she randomly wore that hat too. She just picked it up and put it on, and that
became the characters for the entrance. We used the hat for her entrance.
Oh my God! You know what? I do not remember the hat.
And she remembers.
I'm going to have to go back.
Yeah.
Sometimes an actor does something like that—a piece of clothing or a costume—and you see the character so crystal clear that they have an advantage. just works out that way.
So when I have a question about specifically with your role in the company relative to Kathleen. So when we were clear that we wanted her to be become a recurring character, or I guess she was even in. No, she was in credits, wasn't she?
At some point, not yet, but season five, I think she gets season five.
I know that it was recurring here, 2 to 3 roles.
Yeah.
But when she came back in season five, was it you who would negotiate her contract, or was that Tony Shepard?
No, Lou Patrick.
Lou Patrick. I've heard that name in a while.
I love her. Lou Patrick.
She was fun. Yeah.
Lou Patrick.
She was a woman, a big woman.
Yes.
Lou Patrick was the one who called me. Lou, I hope you don't mind me sharing this. I hope you're doing well. She was the one who called me and said, "Are you aware that Mr. Spelling is putting out all the cast pickups today?" And this was after it was clear that Shannon was not going to come back, and he was sending one out to her. Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you, Lou Patrick.
Chancellor Arnold, Nick Pryor.
Nick Pryor is a good actor. He had been around for a while in town, and I knew him, and I believe I had hired him on another show because I cast a bunch of shows before I did 90210. But it's you just get this as a casting director, you get a repertoire of actors that you've hired before. You remember what you do. You remember the ones who are easy. I keep going back to that word, but it's really important. At least it was really important to me. And he was professional. He came in and did the job. And there was no drama. He just came in and did the job. And that was really, really important to me on 90210.
And he was married to
Christine Belford.
Belford, right? So that was another. Was Chris, I know that season two actor, but none who started in season two. But was that the same kind of MO that you had with her? You knew her?
Absolutely.
An adult.
Yes. Yes, because there are a lot of actors that I had known through the years. I either had them in, they either got a job or they didn't get a job, or I met them socially and we had mutual friends, something like that. And she's just a good, good actress, just like Nick is. Just good, good, solid working actors.
He's still working.
Another storyline, and obviously this one, Cress Williams, Dina Meyer, and Scott Paulin all kind of work together. But let's talk about Cress Williams.
Cress Williams is terrific. He was actually found by my assistant Kelly McDonald, and she came in and she said, "I've been invited to come meet some actors. Would you want to do it, or you know?" Should I do it? And I said, if you want to do it, they've invited you, then you're more than welcome to do it. And she did. And she came back the next day and I asked her how it went. And she said, "Would you please meet this one actor? He was really, really good. I just want you to meet him." And I said, "Great, set him up." And it was Cress Williams. And he came in. Again, an ease of entering the room. He was terrific. He was really new, really, really new, but just there's something about him. He was
a UCLA student at the time? Yeah,
I think so.
Or just a recent grad, one or the other?
Yeah. One or the other, something like that. I don't remember specifics, but I remember liking him an awful lot. And that's Kelly.
So then they write the Deshaun part, and then does it all kind of click for you? Like this is Cress Williams, or how does that sort of?
I would read the roles, and I thought, okay, let's bring him in for this role, see what happens, and that's how it happens.
And do you remember that, Jack?
Yeah, I remember that he was the unanimous choice in the room that we all liked him.
Yeah. He looks like the real thing.
Yeah. Of course, the one thing was, unlike, and Diane, I sure will remember this from season one, unlike Tico Wells, who actually came to my house for the Saturday casting session that we had. And he and I played one-on-one basketball together.
I remember that.
Yes, because I beat him. And I ran into him and let him know, and he still thinks about it. But nonetheless, the one thing that we didn't know about Crest was that basketball was not his forte.
Yes.
So we never showed too much basketball.
Right. What about Dina Meyer?
Dina Meyer was someone I had met previously, and I just always liked her as an actress. And I read it and I thought, okay, let's bring Dina in. Let's see what happens.
Well, what I remember about Dina is being introduced to her by Tony Shepard telling me this is who's going to play this part.
Exactly. I don't think there was an audition for that. Exactly.
I don't think there was either.
No, we saw a picture of her. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
She can do it. Okay. If you say so. Because Tony, I don't think ever did that. I think that, not with us. I can't remember him ever walking into me and saying, this is what you're hiring. Oh, yes, I could do Barry Bonds. Those two.
Yes.
But I think he did that with Joey.
Well, no, he didn't. No, because remember there was Frank Gorshin.
Frank Gorshin.
Okay.
And the good money was on. And the good money was on Frank Gorshin. Now, whether maybe everybody knew the fix was in for Joey, but I didn't know that, and I wanted him very much, so it didn't matter.
The fix was in.
I love it. Sometimes it happens that way.
It does happen that way.
Should we talk Scott Paulin? Also a part of that storyline?
Love Scott Paulin as an actor. Just loved him. And he was just, he was one of those good working Hollywood actors who had great credits. And you could always count on him. And he worked a lot. And just the fact that, you know, he would come in. And I can't remember, was he directing for the show by that time? Or did he direct after he did the role?
After.
Okay.
Because he was very close with our director friend, Jack Bender. That's how
he's
a bad position.
Let's move to Tracy Mittendorf, who comes in and has this incredible role as Laura Kingman. Do you remember reading Tracy?
I remember reading Tracy just a little bit, but specifics, I am sorry to admit that I do not.
And do you know, like, who in some of season four who may have been up for specific roles that did not get it? Do you have any of that sort of noted?
Going back into my notes, I could probably find that, yes, because I do have the season four book in front of me. But pulling it out right now. Probably not.
All right, we'll follow up with that.
Okay, I'll write that down.
There's another great storyline. There's Kerry Keene, Nolie Thornton, and David Hayward, who come in and scam Dylan. Yes. What do you remember about? Let's start with Nolie.
Nolie Thornton is a wonderful little girl and such a wonderful actress, and she was. Martin Short had a TV show at the time. And she was on that show. And I can't remember, it had to have been a recurring role, but we had to make all sorts of arrangements to get her from one set to the other. Mm. Because sometimes she worked on the same day, and because of limitations with children, we both shows had to pay attention, but she wanted to do both. And I mean, she was a little trooper. That's what I remember about Nolie. Mm. And she always showed up. But I remember one day getting a call that they were running over on the Martin Short show. And I was kept saying, oh, just get her there. Just get her there. Just get her to work. Please get her to work on time. I love Nolie. She's wonderful.
She looks lovely today. She's been on the show. She's had a wonderful life. Yeah.
But Kerry Keene as well, that she's told us that she didn't realize that they were working a scam, the actress who was working a scam. Do you remember Kerry?
Oh, yeah. I always liked Kerry Keene. That was a trio of actors, and David Hayward, Kerry and David, they, you know, good working actors. You just always want to hire them. You always want them to be a part of what you were doing because they are quality. great backgrounds. They're easy. They're nice people.
And I doubt, Diane, that you ever told them that this was going to be a long-running, it was a recurring characters, but that there was going to be a long-running scam, because whether you know this or not, that Mr. Spelling, when Jessica pitched him this story and said, no, this isn't going to work, they're going to know these people are there to rip him off from the get-go. And I'm saying, Aaron, I promise you, and when we get to the end of the arc and this happens, no one will remember those initial doubts that they would have had, because Will would have had enough,
bonding,
incident and plot to go through. So I doubt, knowing that there was that reservation about it, I doubt I ever said anything to you where we were ultimately going with
this. No, she wouldn't have known.
Obviously, Paul would have known.
No. I knew it was recurring, but that was it.
Exactly.
Jason Carter as Roy Randolph.
That was the drama teacher.
I remember the name.
He was an Englishman.
Forgive
Let's
me.
Talk about that. Let's talk
it's
about that.
Long, what, my bad memory?
No, British actors in Hollywood. British actors what are they doing? I liked him. We've gotten to know him. Another friend of ours of the podcast.
Oh, good. But okay.
I've said this to express this to so many of the actors that Pete tracks down for us to talk to. It's just a pleasure for me to get to talk to them now, because I didn't talk to them then. Right. You know, we cast them, they'd be a nod, but sometimes if we'd be in the same room, but otherwise I didn't know. Really.
Yeah, moving on.
But I always was suspicious of, like, the Brit actors should be in London, being in their wonderful television film and theater lives. What are they doing in Hollywood? Is it hard
to make money?
Here in town, is it hard to find really good British actors in Los Angeles, because what are they doing here?
Well, obviously I don't know about now, but at the time there were a lot of British actors here, you know, because there was more work here. At the time, I could be wrong, but to get noticed on an American television show, especially like 90210, that was seen worldwide.
And I think what Larry says is true. They pay more here.
They didn't pay a lot. Yes. British television did not pay a lot.
No.
The BBC was particularly cheap.
Let's talk about Paul Johansson.
PJ.
Paul Johansson. I had actually met him before 90210, but it was terrific to find out that he was one of Jason's friends.
One of the posse.
Yeah, one of the posse. And I had gone to Jason, and once I realized he had this group, and I said, just tell me their names. Tell me their names.
David Sherrill, we cast, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, gosh. I'm not remembering more specific names, but I went to him. And then after a casting session with one that his friends had come to, either one or multiple, I tried to generally keep it to one. I would go to Jason and I would say, this is who we read. This is what happened today. And they may not get the role because of this reason, but we'll bring them back for something else, or they are getting the role. And I want to let you know. Because I always thought that he should have that information.
Mm-hmm.
Courtesy.
Yeah. Paul's
thank
wonderful.
You for,
yeah.
Thank you for doing that, by the way.
You're welcome. I tried.
We just talked to this one recently, Brooke Thies.
I love Brooke Thies.
She loves you too.
Her. She is... I met her when I was casting the pilot for Just the 10 of Us.
Oh,
and I was, it was a spinoff of Growing Pains, and I did searches all over the country for kids, and I met Brooke. I can't remember if I had hired her on Growing Pains first.
I think she said yes. I think that's right. I think Growing Pains was the start. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she is such a joy. Such a joy to be around as a human being and as an actor. And I just loved her. I introduced her to her husband, Brian, who is also an actor, and they're so great together. And obviously I haven't seen them in years and years, but they're terrific. And I am going to say that that was an episode that I watched yesterday.
Oh, amazing.
Ooh, yes. And because I just thought, okay, what's the most recent? And that was the one. And I saw Brooke's name and Brooke, I want to see this. It was, you know, she's still joyous. She's terrific. I just love her. I would automatically, if I were still casting, I would bring her in for something. If I got an opportunity, if there was a show up here or a movie or something and I got involved with it, I would say, and if there was a role, I'd say, oh, Brooke. Mm.
Carrie wore her.
I remember her because of her last name. And I remember what she looks like, but more specifics, I am so sorry. I am not.
It's okay. Chuck, we didn't hear you, buddy.
You wouldn't have cast Carrie on just the 10 of us. It was a different kind of character, you know, different kind of character actor. She was more of a Zalman King actor. Actors.
Yeah, she was a sexy actress.
Oh, very sexy. Carrie were, right, yeah.
That was who Brian, David Silver had a dalliance with in the limousine. Well,
he loses his virginity to her.
Oh, okay.
We've got Matthew Peretta, who is Andrea's initial boyfriend, Dan Rubin.
I remember him a little bit, yes. I thought he was very, very good looking.
Yeah,
something Chuck and I were wondering about. The Wendy Benson comes in and she's one of the girls in Minnesota in the top of the season. Brenda is going to be spending some time in Minnesota. Do you know if the girls that were cast in Minnesota thought they were going to be on longer, or did they know that this was only going to be a couple of episodes?
You know what, when I was looking at the questions that you sent to me, I thought, and I read that one and I thought, I don't even remember this. Who are the girls in Minnesota? And I am so, so sorry.
It's okay. Yeah.
That was just one that I had. How did you get them to show up? I mean, you know, because I think when we started putting the episodes together, we didn't know pretty much. We knew she would be probably coming back, but it was to the action in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know that for sure.
Wasn't she already in Los Angeles?
I mean, in terms of her screen time, she wouldn't be in Minnesota. She would be showing up back at Beverly Hills at the end of episode 2. Okay. And I don't remember, Larry, if that was very clear before you were writing Little Fishes.
Well, Little Fishes, she comes back from Minnesota.
Right.
I think it would have been Chuck, because we would have broke all those, the first four episodes at once.
At the same time. Yeah, so, yeah, you're right.
How about Jed Allen as Steve's dad?
I love Jed Allen. Yeah,
that was brilliant casting, because those characters, even, I mean, I know he's adopted, but then he really is the dad. There's a lot to go on there, but it's such great casting. They look like they're related.
Yes. And they also act the same way, mm-hmm. too. And that's what got to me. And it made me laugh inside, because they could really be father and son.
Totally. I mean, is that something that you recognized immediately, or is that something that happened as the show was continued being made?
It was when Jed came in, because sometimes I always ask for sometimes I would ask for actors to come in just to say hello, because I hadn't seen them in a while. And I'm trying to remember if I did that with Jed, but I don't. But when he came in, I was like, oh yeah, okay. This is Steve's dad. It works.
Do you guys remember that, Chuck, or?
I don't,
No, not the specific casting.
Which episode you think was he introduced in? I know.
I think the one with Barry Bonds.
That's the first one?
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I think he just, when I think of Jed and in the part, he just really was this guy. He really was a show business, Hollywood business player. Guy, what was the rest, some of the Tale of the Cock kind of red leather. I used to, you know, scotch and sirloin kind of actor.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ryan Thomas Brown, our friend Muntz, you know, he's someone that you guys cast in season four.
Yeah. He's near you. He lives in the North Pacific Northwest, Diane.
He's on Whidbey Island, I think.
Oh, okay. I have friends on Whidbey Island.
I think he's working at a great restaurant out there too. So maybe you guys can catch up. Do you remember Ryan?
Thank you. He's on the west side. I'm on the east. Yes, sir.
Do you remember Ryan?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do remember. I can see his face right now. And he just fit in. You know, I go back, you're going to get tired of hearing me say it, but it's the ease of an actor. You know, he was easy. He fit in. He fit in with Cudlitz and, you know, all of the guys there.
Our friend here, Zachary Throne, who would be the radio station's Howard. Do you remember casting him at all?
Zachary Throne, I remember because I have known him as an actor for a long time.
That was season four of casting. We will be back next week where we will dive into season six. As always, follow us on Instagram, Beverly Hills 90210 Show, Beverly Hills 90210 Show. com and all of the places that you get the podcast. See you next week.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.